The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to the weekend preview on the Athletic Football Podcast, sponsored by Bet365. I'm Dan Bardell, and today myself and George Ellick will preview the best of the weekend's Premier League action alongside Bet365's Steve Freith. Not even going to go in with the usual chit-chat and ask either of you how you are, because there's a lot of good games on the TV this week and I want to preview them and get into them with you. But what I will do is say, remember, you can sign up to The Athletic and save 33% on access to the best newsroom in sport. So that's just £3.33 a month for an entire year. All you got to do is head to theathletic.com/footballpod and you'll be able to take advantage of that offer. Game one, Watford v Norwich, Friday night football, another blow to George in his EFL career. Steve, I feel like you like a relegation six-pointer. You seem like the kind of guy to me that would love a relegation six-pointer when it doesn't involve West Bromwich Albion.
I was going to say, yeah. I thought there'd be an Albion dig there. Yeah. I'm looking forward to this game, Dan. I think the odds will see a change. Unless it's a draw, if there's a winner in this game, the odds will change quite dramatically, really. Norwich are currently the 14-1 on favourites to go down, with Burnley at 1-2 and Watford at 8-15. Should Watford win, I could see them lengthening to around 4-5, so a little bit closer to even money. Well, Norwich will be around the 25-1 on chance as well, but of course, Norwich will be pushed out and Watford would be in the mix even more at 2-5 should they lose this game as well. Watford last week, I suppose they'll be buoyed by that result at Newcastle, won't they, as well, where they bought three new players into the side as well. And I thought they looked better defensively, I have to say. And with Norwich winning as well against the bang average Everton side, I'm definitely looking forward to this one.
Yeah, trio of new faces for Watford, as you mentioned. George, do you know anything about Samir, Hassan Kamara or Edo Kayembe? Are they people that have been on your radar?
I know more about the players who played for Watford last season in the Championship, and this does kind of feel like it's a bit of a game where, in my EFL work that you mentioned, I'm probably going to be covering at least one of these teams next season, having covered them both last season. And the winner of this is going to have a pretty significant advantage when it comes to staying in the Premier League. But no, I'm not going to sit here and lie. I'm not going to lie to the listeners and pretend that I'm an expert on these three players. But I did watch the game and watch these three players, and they all impressed. And that's important. It's only one game. But all three of them looked to be a bit of an upgrade. And it was Newcastle. Although Newcastle now, it was still a big game away from home. And they got an important point having been behind. The one who impressed me the most was Edo Kayembe, who played in centre midfield. And he looked like a player who's just a bit of an upgrade. We've seen Tom Cleverley there for much of this season. And no disrespect to Cleverley, who's been a decent player for Watford over the last few seasons. But he looked like an upgrade. Someone who's very able to get around the pitch, very good passing ability, able to kind of set Watford off on attacks whilst also being very tidy. But all three of them, I think Watford fans have been pretty happy with their business so far. Watford's owners, for all of the mistakes they've maybe made in the past and their willingness to sack managers often when it's really mattered in the past, the recruitment has been on point in January when they've needed it to be so. Their European scouting network is very, very strong, and we're seeing that now. So I would upgrade Watford as they stand with those new players in the side from where we had them in the first half of the season. And I think this is a great opportunity for that side to show, and those players to show, what they can do. They didn't drop points away from home against a relegation rival. Now at home against one, it's going to be very important to pick up all three.
Steve, I said this on the Totally Football show yesterday. I think Watford have won for 7 games. Now, Ranieri still being in a job at a normal football club, that's the equivalent of being given 3 to 4 years. That's like, I'm so shocked he's still in a job.
Yeah, it is. Particularly a club like Watford, who are perceived to be joking about how many managers they can get in a season, and the fact that just to struggle, just to draw games, let alone win as well. I suppose with the window that he's had and the new players and whatever, and these runner games coming up that they've got, he's going to be given a further chance, particularly, Norwich, and they got Brighton and your boys as well coming up to it before quite a sticky run as well. I've never been totally convinced by him, but of course, I suppose that Leicester City win as well would tell me to shut up about it. Yeah, but it's going to be interesting.
Wasn't a bad achievement,
Watford,
was it?
Yeah, come a bit of slack, Steve. I mean, anyone in the Premier League, not a big deal.
Exactly.
Not a big deal at all.
Exactly that.
Just the greatest achievement in football history. But Yeah, it's interesting because this is it's one of my, not pet peeves, but it's something I'm always careful with because it's easy for us as people who watch a lot of football but aren't fans of a side. You know, you look at the results and you look at the league table and you can jump very quickly to conclusions when actually fans of the club themselves will tell you that a look at their page of their results doesn't really tell the full story here. And I think that's the case here with Watford and Ranieri, because the level of performance when he first came in were immediately so much better than what they had previously under Munoz. And it was just a frustration for Watford and a frustration for their fans that those performances came against Chelsea, came against Leicester, and were games, and even in the Man City game where they retreated and played very deep, you know, the uptick in form where we probably would have seen the fabled new manager bounce came against sides where Watford were going to have to improve so much in order to get results. It was never really going to happen. Now, they haven't been as good recently until the game against Newcastle, where we might see a bit of an upturn in fortunes. But I would just, I would say that anyone who's looking at Watford and sees the run of defeats, there has definitely been an improvement. Ranieri certainly has Watford fans more on side than the previous manager, and crucially, they want him to be given a chance. So we're going to see now with an improved squad, and probably this game. I mean, this game on Friday night is going to be the proper test, where if Watford get beaten at home by Norwich, that will be a very marked dip in terms of what they've done so far, and then question marks probably will be asked of Ranieri. But at the moment, I think there's still enough. He's got enough credit in his locker for some previous performances, mixed in with the improved recruitment, that he should be okay for the time being.
Steve, did Norwich's win against Everton kind of get lost in all the Rafa Benitez stuff with his sacking? Because, you know, Norwich at that point, any win is an excellent win, even if it is against a beleaguered Everton side.
Yeah, I think so, Dan. I had to do a double take at the table as well. I thought they were just going to finish 20th and that was going to be it. I didn't expect them ever to get out of that position, really. And I looked again after the weekend and they were 18th. I mean, if you're a Norwich fan, you know, you wait 9.5 hours for a goal, then two come along at once. So, you know, the Michael Keane own goal, and then however you want to pronounce it. He's, George, you're normally the expert on these type of pronunciations.
Well, he's played in the AFL, so I'd expect George to know.
I was Ida initially, and I think I might have been wrong. I think it might be Ida.
I think we're set for I was going to say entertaining game, Dan, but I think it might be a quiet affair, and I might be looking at under goals in this one because he might be quite nervy.
Yeah, it's a crucial game at the bottom end of the Premier League. Famous question for you, Steve. How many points do we think teams are going to need to beat the drop this season?
I mean, gone are the days, guys, where, you know, old managers would say, well, 40 points is the benchmark this season. We need 40 points to survive. And the last five seasons, I think you'd have survived with 35 points. And it's hard to believe that Fulham last season, I mean, the three teams that got relegated last season were dreadful, and Albion were one of them. But Fulham only got 28 points when finishing in 18th spot. That's the lowest ever for a team finishing in 18th position. So we've got a market of over or under 27.5 points for the team finishing in 18th. And we're 5-2 for under that. So a new record after last season. So yeah, we're not expecting the bottom three with all those games in hand not to get anywhere near that magical 40, at least anyway.
It's really difficult to gauge the league table at all, especially Burnley with about six games in hand. I think they've got now. It's really difficult. If you're one of those other relegation threatened teams, you must just be like, anything can happen with Burnley here. Six games to play that we've already played.
Who's going to score the goals there for him, Dan? That's the thing.
Corne.
Andy Carroll.
Corne's the goal scorer there. Or Andy Carroll, if he rocks up there. What's your tip for the game, George?
I think, crucially, it's a huge game, this. Like, that's what we have to look at. And in terms of a betting proposition, you mentioned Burnley there. Watford currently sit in 17th. But is that a correct position? Because Burnley have two games in hand on them. They're 3 points behind. And then you've got a five-point gap between 17th and 16th, where Everton sit. And you think Everton should have enough quality to get enough points on the board to make this into a four-horse race to go into three. Watford, I think, are the value. They're even money to win the game, giving them effectively a 50% chance of doing so. Now, Watford's issue over the last few weeks has been their poor defensive record, and they're conceding plenty of chances as well. But given Norwich's struggles in front of goal, given their inability to basically get the ball into Teemu Pukki, this feels like the kind of game that will play into their hands. And because of that poor run of form we mentioned, because they've got 1 point from their last seven or however many games it is, I'm not necessarily sure the price is also taking into the fact that they have an upgrade in centre midfield, an upgrade at centre back, and an upgrade at left back as well. So it's a big game for them. I think a win here would go a long way to to pushing Norwich ever closer to relegation. But a win for Norwich here, you know, even though they're the team who've played the most games with 21, a win here would see them overtake Watford, and points on the board is so important. But I do anticipate that Watford should be too strong for them. I think they are the better side. I think they'll finish above them. And that even money, I think that's probably just about a more likely than 50% chance that Watford win this one, which makes the even money value.
That moves us on nicely to managerless Everton against Aston Villa, which is the Saturday lunchtime game. Duncan Ferguson is set to remain in interim charge for a little bit. Earlier on this week, one of the best podcasts in the Athletic stable, 1874, asked Everton correspondent Greg O'Keefe if Villa's job on Saturday just got a whole lot harder.
You know, Duncan got a massive bouncer and a huge reaction from the players against Chelsea back in 2019 when he was the caretaker before Ancelotti came in. All the cliches, he just managed to encourage them to run that extra yard, put their bodies on the line a bit more than, because he's got the respect in the dressing room and he's got that sort of synergy with the fans. And I think you've got all the ingredients for a real bear pit atmosphere. Goodison now, you've got the villain in Gerrard, who's, you know, not very popular for obvious reasons. And you've got Duncan, the hero, back in the dugout. And it's a, you know, it's a must win. So I think it does make Villa's task harder.
So annoying. Give Benitez another week. Why do we have to be the ones that take them on when they're going to be re-galvanised under Duncan Ferguson? So, so frustrating. I know every team thinks these kind of things happen to them. This feels typical. Not happy at all. It's a completely different game now, isn't it, Steve?
Yes, it is, yeah. We are struggling to split you, though. I think you're still favourites to win the game, Dan. I've just checked the latest prices and you're 8-5 to win at Goodison Park. But, I mean, so many Everton fans or football fans in general, when they say, yeah, we told you so, we knew that was going to happen. It was both for both parties, really. And I just wonder whether that type of manager now has had their day. I mean, he got rid of the medical staff, the director of football went, Luca Dean went and finally hit.
Crazy, yeah. The Luca Dean going the week before the manager gets the sack.
Utterly.
Absolutely baffled me that did.
Yeah, utterly bizarre. And I know it worked well at the start and he's papering over the cracks, the 1.7 million that was spent on Townsend and Gray and everything they hit turned to either went in or it was an assist and they looked like £50 million signings instead of the 1.7 million that they'd spent. And Decore looked one of the best box-to-box midfielders in the division as well. I don't think Pickford's been as good this season. And they've scored 19 goals in 19 games. So, yeah, big dunk, big chance for him now to put his stamp on it. And, you know, who knows? Everton aren't going to get relegated around 7-1. They're not going to go into Europe. Why not give them a run as the manager and see where they go?
There are a lot of issues with the squad itself. And I wouldn't be... Duncan Ferguson feels like the kind of appointment where, Dan, you are in a bit of trouble. It feels like the kind of appointment where he might squeeze a little bit out of a side in the short term. But to expect him to be an upgrade with the same group of players than Benitez, I think is pretty fanciful. And whoever does come in is going to have a difficult time to making this squad and this team any better than a side just outside the relegation zone. And if the likes of Watford or Newcastle or Burnley with their games in hand do go on a run, I think Everton are there to be shot at. So, I mean, Calvert-Lewin's return to fitness is obviously huge. If he returns to form, that will be a big, big boost to them. But they've lost Dean and there are a lot of players there out of form. So I'm still pretty concerned. If I was an Everton fan, yes, I know they're delighted to see the back of Rafa. And it was an appointment that never should have happened given his history with their arch rivals. But he is proven enough to be at the very worst capable that I can't see suddenly the shackles being off and Everton going on a big run to finish the season.
Just got even more toxic week by week and probably way more toxic than you even ever could have predicted at Everton under Benitez. I don't think it could have got much worse. Steve, I'll come to you for this. Are Aston Villa in a bit of a false position? Are they a lot stronger than where they are in the league, 13th?
You've lost 11 games, Dan, haven't you? Yeah, as I've picked up.
I know the stats, thanks.
As I picked up last week. Yeah, I was cursing Villa a bit last week because we have an offer where you go two goals ahead and we pay out. So we paid out on Manchester United winning the game when they went 2-0 up. So that was over £2 million. So,
oh dear.
Yeah, so yeah, we paid out on that. But it's, I know.
You paid out, didn't you, Steve? That was out of your pocket, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, not all of it. But as you know, taking my baggy's hat,
half the bonus
firmly off, you know, the impact of Coutinho when he came on, the, you know, 15 touches, two shots on target, also Luca Dini as well, 25 touches in the final third. He had two shots. He created two chances. The crowd, you know, got behind Villa, as they always tend to do whenever I see them or listen to them on the radio, to be honest with you, Dan. And you could just sense it in the second half there that they were going to come back. Listen, Villa are 25-1 to finish in the top six and evens to finish in the top half. I think Aston Villa do finish in the top half this season. And clearly, we're talking about more signings by the end of the window. I don't know whether the Suarez one is true or fanciful, or Gerrard's going to get the band back together. Andy Carroll's available. Then we'll, you know, we'll see what happens. But it's it feels exciting times to be a Villa fan at the moment, and that hurts.
Yeah, it's definitely exciting, especially when you think about where Birmingham and West Brom are. I think, you know, you must hurt the fans, as you just said. I don't think Luis Suarez will be rocking up at Villa anytime soon. I'd be very, very surprised if that happened. I was very confident on Coutinho, and I did come on this podcast and say, and Steve scoffed at me, but I was right, and Steve was wrong.
Where were you? Where were you for the comeback?
George.
Because we know you weren't there, so talk us through how you followed it.
I was sat in a restaurant. Unbelievable.
Loyal fan. That's what loyal fans do, sit in restaurants.
I felt very much like Steve. Must feel like at the football
action. That's what you do at stadiums normally, Steve. So.
Yeah, bringing me third. It felt very much the same. But I was aware of what was going on. I was aware of what was happening. Very, very pleased to see them get back to 2-2. As I say, I don't think Luis Suarez will be coming through the door, but one I think who might is Nat Phillips to add competition at centre-half at Villa Park.
Well, you know your stuff, Dan. I know I was joking with you last time about Coutinho, but yeah, it'll be a good acquisition for you as well.
Yeah, I don't see him breaking up the Konsa and Mings partnership, but we need another centre-half, so he'd be one I'd expect to see through the door. I think this will actually be the game of the weekend. You quote me next week. I think this will be a really good game on Saturday at Goodison Park. What's your tip for it, Steve?
Well, now you said that, Dan, I'm going to go for 0-0. How about that?
Yeah. I got a few of the cup sets right.
Steve. Yeah, no goal scorer at 9-1 it is. No, Dan, Luca Dean, I'm going to stick with him. The way that he got forward last week impressed me. And I'm interested to see the reaction he'll get actually at Goodison Park on this. I'm going to go for him to score any time at a double figure price because he hasn't. I think the last time he scored was 2019. So it's been a few years since he scored a Premier League goal. So yes, I think he's tempting me.
Jeez, I think the Everton fans would be seething if that happened. It would just sum up the way things have been going for them at the moment.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Right then, before we continue with the podcast, please remember that if you are going to have a bet this weekend, make sure that you do so responsibly. George, you've got some helpful tips on how to make sure that we do just that.
Yeah, it's important to us that the listeners of this podcast are in control of their gambling. This is a podcast for those who are 18 years of age and older. Please ensure that you are only staking what you can afford to lose, and do visit begambleaware.org for any information to ensure that you're gambling responsibly.
Game 3 is Southampton against Manchester City, which is Saturday tea time. Let's put James Ward-Prowse under the spotlight then, guys. George, where does he rank in terms of all-time Premier League free kick takers?
Beckham strikes. Oh, save! Oh, there's one for the picture book. Solas kick! What do you say about that?
He's beaten again. Oh, he just stands and waits for his teammates to come and congratulate the master. That seems perfect. Anything that hits a weak one is on it.
Been thinking about this a lot over the last 24 hours because, I mean, it was an incredible hit on the weekend in what was obviously a poor performance and a poor result for them. But it's the consistency with Ward-Prowse I think is so impressive, and it's the variety of his free kicks. You know, if you think about all of the, you know, the best free kick takers that we think of in the Premier League, you've got Beckham who clearly had his dipping, bending free kicks over the wall was his trademark. You've got the likes of Henri, who could take free kicks with both feet. You've got a Payet, who, you know, I think his Payet's free kick, even though he only scored 3 Premier League free kicks, his free kick against Crystal Palace is probably up there with the best, if not the best, free kick we've seen in the Premier League, where it dipped about 4 feet in the air before cushioning in off the joint in the top right-hand corner. You've got Ronaldo, who consistently his trademark free kick of smashing it into the wall or over the bar. You know, you've got all these different trademarks that these players have. But the amazing thing with Ward-Prowse is that he's got it all. He can do absolutely anything. He's brilliant. He's just as good at the Yaya Toure just on the edge, clipping it over the wall into the top corner as he is from smacking it from 35 yards with sheer power. And that's what sets him apart. So, I mean, where does he stand amongst those players I've already mentioned? Well, I mean, he's certainly better than Ronaldo. But whether or not he's the best, I think Beckham, Henri, Zola, are they the three? I mean, I think we think of Yaya having that very one specialist technique that no one could really pull off. But I think those top three with Ward-Prowse are probably the four I'd lean towards.
Nobby Solano was another one.
I loved Ian Hart for Leeds, you know, going back a few years. I mean, he wasn't the quickest Ian Hart. He probably ran as quick running up to take a free kick as he did defending. But boy, he had a great career, and that left foot was absolutely fantastic.
I think Ward-Prowse is the best, you know, over Beckham.
I'd give him the best as well. I agree.
I just think he's incredible.
Recency bias, of course.
If you turn the conversation into best dead ball general, then I think he probably wins. I mean, it's between him and Beckham because his corners are also just incredible. Yeah. I'd love to know. I mean, there will be some even nerdier than me who'll be able to tell you what kind of goal, you know, how his corners have impacted their the amount of goals they've scored over the period of time compared to the average, because it'll be massive. You know,
I can tell you he took 166 corners last season. 41 chances from set plays that Southampton got, and he scored 4 goals direct from free kicks. That's the only basic data that I have on that, unfortunately.
Four in one season is mega.
But also, the unbelievable thing with that is if you think that's 160 corners taken, 40 chances created, I'd be amazed if most corners have that ratio of just connecting with your own teammate off the end of a corner there. And we saw last night watching the Manchester United game, I think they've had about 125 corners this season, 120, and they're yet to score from one. So, I mean, he's a player who is probably now destined to play out his career at Southampton. You know, there was talk of him going to Villa in the summer. I think if he was ever going to leave, that probably would have been the one, because I'm sure Villa would have had the financial clout to get him. But yeah, he's an incredible player to watch. I think it must be between him and Bex for that dead ball specialist, the best we've ever seen in the league.
How long do you think he practices each day?
Well, he said, didn't he? He basically said he was messing around with free kicks with that new technique at the end of the week. He just thought, I'd try it in a Premier League game. He fires it in, absolutely incredible free kick, just from messing around in training, trying a new technique. To if he only started trying that this week and he's pulled it off in a Premier League game, I think that tells you everything you need to know. Staying with Southampton, The Athletic are reporting that Armando Broja is unlikely to continue on loan at the Saints past this season. Good enough to warrant a big bid from Southampton, probably, but is he good enough to fight for a place in the current Chelsea attack? George, bearing in mind, you know, Tammy Abraham's been sold recently because he wasn't good enough. Is Broja going to be good enough? I really like him, actually.
I think he is the perfect striker to be second fiddle to whoever is the main striker at Chelsea. And Chelsea have played an absolute blinder here, because before loaning him out to Southampton in August, he signed a new 5-year deal in July. And that means, because not many players, especially not a 20-year-old who's already proving himself to be good enough to play up top for a team in the Premier League, are going to want to go and play second fiddle to another side. But as we saw with Tammy Abraham, given he signed this new long-term contract, one of two things happens. Either he has to make do with that, especially with Romelu Lukaku being at the club. Even though he's not in great form, he'll always be second behind Broja. Or someone has to spend an extortionate amount of money to get him. And that's where I see him being. You know, he's obviously very good. He's proving himself now. Chelsea will be over the moon with the kind of form that he's showing at Saints at the moment and his popularity there. And yes, probably he'd be better for his own development to continue playing. But I've got a feeling he'll be at Chelsea for a few years yet. Never probably being that number one striker, but certainly a very effective player for them to have and to be able to call upon. Because at the moment, they don't really have that. You know, you look at Lukaku, whether he's been out of the team because of form, fitness, or interviews with Sky Italia, they haven't had a player to be able to call upon to play that role. You know, Havertz has played a fair bit up top. He's only scored 2 goals this season. We've seen consistently that Timo Werner is not the man to play through the middle. And I think Chelsea fans and Chelsea would probably quite like to have him for the second half of the season to play that role. But he'll be at Saints till the end of the campaign and then they'll have a decision to make. Do they want to buy a player from Chelsea on a 4-year deal who they'll be happy to keep? Or will they have to turn their attentions elsewhere?
Yeah, Sam Lee's been writing about Kevin De Bruyne, who was decisive in City's win over Chelsea last weekend. But Pep has once again highlighted his struggles against teams who defend with a low block. Even as good as he is he showing a willingness to adapt his role recently in a more patient City team, Steve?
Well, yeah. I mean, I was there after on Boxing Day to see him, and it was a pleasure to...
You've not mentioned that Boxing Day trip that you had, Steve,
to watch that game. And Dan, he's into second favourite now for the PFA award. You know,
really?
So, yeah, I know it's... I mean, he's won it the last 2 years as well. It was a surprise to me. It feels like he should be a double-figure prize for it as well. He's only started 11 games this season and played 1,000 minutes, but he's still managed 40 shots and 6 Premier League goals. He's averaging over 3.5 shots per 90. The one thing that surprised me was just one assist. And if you look at the last 2 seasons, he's got 12 and 20. And, you know, reading up on it, he seems to be putting fewer balls into the box. I think you could argue that, well, they don't have a number 9, so why bother? But his expected assist is over 4. So I think that might change pretty soon as well. And let's remember, he had a pretty bad bout of COVID as well quite recently. So he's coming back to fitness as that. But Kevin De Bruyne, for me, would still be one of the first names on the team sheet.
Another City win potentially kills the title. What are the latest odds with them double and treble wise, Steve?
Yeah, well, they're 16-1 on to win the title, Dan, and they're 12-1 to win the treble as well this season. They're also 12-1 to get 100 points in the Premier League as well, which they did before back in 2018 when they reached that record tally by beating Manchester United by 19 points as well. So we don't think they'll get anywhere near that amount this season, but we still think they'll win the title clearly at 1-16.
And George, how do you see this one playing out?
Looking back at the games between these two sides in recent years, with Hasenhüttl going up against Pep Guardiola's Man City, there have been three that have been under 1.5 goals. We've got the 1-0 win from Southampton last July. Then after that, City went to St Mary's and beat them in December 1-0. Then the 5-2 at the back end of last season in March. And then a 0-0 draw at the Etihad back in September. So you've got three games there that have been pretty low scoring and one which was an absolute goal fest. And I think given the 13-8 about there being under 2.5 goals, we have to look at those four, look at the 5-2 as being an outlier and assume there that not many teams have suffocated Man City's attack as well as Ralph Hasenhüttl's teams have on 3 occasions of the 4. So, I mean, yes, it could end up being a goal fest, and yes, an early goal for City would probably open it up, but there's enough evidence there for me to suggest that the unders is a little bit overpriced.
Palace v Liverpool is 2 p.m. Sunday, so another Chelsea loanee, Conor Gallagher. Another one who's probably good enough to actually battle for a place in the current Chelsea team, especially the form they're in at the moment. But Steve, you know him well. Oh, better off at Palace, isn't he? 7 goals this season already, edging towards double figures.
Yeah, brilliant. Brilliant to see. Of course, he's playing in a better side than he did last season, Dan. 2 goals last season, I think he got with us, and 2 assists as well. You know, he's already had 35 shots, 15 have been on target as well, and it's great to see. You know, he did. I was going to say box to box, but he didn't get in the opposition box a great deal last season for us. But you know, the amount of pressures that he did, you could tell he was closing down just like he's doing this season. He was actually third in the Premier League last season with 708 behind Bruno Fernandes, maybe a little bit surprisingly, and Højbjerg, and he's second this season to Christian Norgaard with 412. So. Bit of an old-fashioned midfielder, you know, can do everything really. And as an Albion fan, you know, I do kind of class him as an ex-player. You know, the fact he was there, even though he is a Chelsea player as well, it's good to see. And it'd be interesting to see whether he can, you know, what happens with his future. But he's got a hell of a one coming up, you would hope.
You've not moved on from him, Steve, but I'm pretty sure he'd like to forget that he ever spent any time.
True. I don't blame him. I'm just wiping the tears away now, Dan, as we speak.
George, Liverpool beat Brentford without their African stars, Fabinho chipping in with the goals. But as Kiever O'Neill has been writing for The Athletic this week, the defensive midfielder's fundamental role is to screen, not to score. Is he the best at what he does in the Premier League? I'm sure Rodri would have something to say about that, but arguably the best.
How do I answer that diplomatically? Because they're both so good at what they do. I think Fabinho is probably more important to Liverpool than Rodri is to City. And that's no slight on Rodri at all. It's more they have other players who can come in and do it. You know, I mean, Fernandinho's done it well. It's been a while since Gundogan played that role, but we know that he has done many, many times very impressively as well. Whereas we see with Liverpool that when Fabinho is out of the side, they're missing so much. You know, we've seen Henderson try and play there. We've seen Thiago try and play there. They're both effectively wasted when they do play there because they want to be the player playing on the flank. Obviously, Thiago normally on the left, Henderson on the right, who are able to be more progressive in possession and do less off the ball because that's where their strengths lie. It helps that he's also very tidy on the ball. It helps that he's got, as we've seen a couple of times in recent weeks in the cup as well, he can pop up with goals when needed. Often forgotten as well that he was a specialist penalty taker back in the day when he played in a side with James Milner and Mohamed Salah, where you're going to struggle to get the ball off them when it comes to taking penalties. But you know, he's a magnificent player, and now he's back to full fitness. You can really notice the difference for Liverpool, and I think given the absence of Mane, of Salah as well, his calming presence has been so important when they cannot rely quite as much on their front three to be as devastating as they normally are. But that it felt like that 3-0 win over Brentford went quite under the radar on Sunday afternoon. It was pretty cosy against a side who've caused some pretty good teams this season some big issues, and they managed to win comfortably in the end. So he's a great player and someone who Liverpool fans are delighted to have back fit and firing in their team.
Yeah, I think I got lost because everyone was so annoyed at the game that was supposed to take place later in that day, not taking place. So I think that's why it kind of got lost a little, because we were all talking about a game that didn't happen.
Didn't happen.
Stevie boy, what's your tip for this game?
Well, over the last six seasons, Dan, Liverpool have won every single one of their six trips to Selhurst Park. But I'm going to go against the grain this time. Obviously, George mentioned they're missing a couple of key players in the forward positions. I think Palace can get something out of this game and will not lose the game. So I'm going with Palace. Double chance currently around the 11-8 mark. So they either win or draw.
Yeah, and apologies for calling you Stevie boy. I'm absolutely never going to do that again. That was really weird. I'm sorry that I did that. So sorry. Yeah, factually incorrect as well. Stevie man would have been right, George.
Stevie old man would probably be closer nearer the mark, guys, I would say.
Game 5, the final game we're going to preview on today's show, is Chelsea v Spurs, 4:30 on Sunday. George, Chelsea embarrassed Spurs in the League Cup twice already this year. We are very early into this year as well. Can we learn much from those two games? Because Conte, you know, they're still unbeaten in the league.
I mean, I'm so confused about how to view this, because you watch those two games between Chelsea and Spurs in the Cup, and the gulf in quality between the two sides was massive. You know, Chelsea easing to victory, especially in the first game, and Spurs didn't really look up for the fight. I know in the second they felt like VAR came and hampered their chances on a few occasions, but generally there was a marked gap between the two sides. But what we've seen in the league compared to what we saw in those two doesn't really support that. In that time since we saw Chelsea go to City and get beaten and then go to Brighton in midweek, where they were second best, whereas Spurs, obviously an incredible game on Wednesday evening, where they were 2-1 down against Leicester going into the 96th minute and somehow managed to win the game 3-2 with two Bergwijn goals. They deserved at least a point in that game. Harry Kane looks somewhat back to his normal menacing self. You know, I think the key we always say with strikers isn't necessarily, you know, if those chances aren't going in, when you've got a player who's as prolific as Harry Kane has been, the goals will come, and that's certainly the case here. And in a couple of other games recently, you know, they've looked far, far better. So I'm left scratching my head, because it's pretty difficult, having watched with our own eyes 180 minutes of Chelsea being dominant. But coming into this one, I would find it very difficult to confidently predict that we would see the same in a league game.
Yeah, was it almost illogical, that cup game? It just made no sense at all with the current goings on at both clubs. You kind of feel like Conte's cajoling Spurs at the moment, and their team spirit that's been fostered and everything going at Spurs is on the way up. Chelsea very much feels like the opposite at the moment, on the way down. Tuchel looking beleaguered, the players playing as individuals, not really playing for the team. They probably deserve to lose to Brighton in midweek. Dom Fifield writes, tired, clunky and awkward. After 18 games in 59 days, Tuchel's Chelsea need a breather. Could they conceivably drop out the top three, Steve? That was unthinkable a few weeks ago.
Yeah, well, we have them at 4-7, Dan, to finish third, actually. I mean, they're 100-1 now to win the title. You know, they were only, what, 2-1? It feels like not so long ago. Boy, how's that changed? And they are 11-4 to finish second, with fourth at 8-1 and fifth or lower at 10-1. So we still firmly with them at 4-7 to finish third. And let's not forget that they had only lost one Premier League game up until the 1st of December, and that was against Manchester City. So you think, OK, that's fair enough. And since then, they've beaten Leeds in the last minute, and then they went to Villa Park and beat you, of course. But I thought they were there for the taking in the first half. And I know they've had three away games in, what, 7 days, which the manager has referred to. That's tough. You know, the round trip for all those three games was 450 miles, and I'm sure they travel in style as well. And that came on the back of four home games on the bounce as well. And he's talking about tired legs. Well, you know, off the bench against Brighton was Kovacic, Havertz and Timo Werner, £156 million worth of talent. You know, so I do get it. There are tired legs, and of course you probably feel a lot more tired after the recent performances as well. And it seems to me a side that are missing their wing-backs an awful lot as well.
But yeah, definitely.
Yeah, we still make Chelsea very warm favourites to win this game at 8-13, with Spurs at 4-1 to cause a bit of a shock at Stamford Bridge.
George, before you give me your prediction, let's just talk about the madness of Wednesday night's football. Well, not the Wednesday night's football, Wednesday night at Leicester. Steven Bergwijn coming from nowhere to score two goals. I think it was 95th and 97th minute. In the end?
96th,
97th,
I think.
Was it 96th and 97th? Jeez.
Yeah.
Absolutely crazy scenes. Just talk us through what you made of that.
Yeah, it was remarkable. You know, Spurs had most of the territory in the second half. Leicester looked very dangerous on the break. James Maddison got the goal, and you had he had Leicester fans singing Spurs get battered everywhere they go. And then not long after that, they're being made to eat their words, because, yeah, it was incredible. You know, Bergwijn getting the first goal. As I mentioned, Harry Kane with the 10 shots. And then the finish for Bergwijn's third in this frantic counter-attack where you've got, you know, suddenly Spurs spring Leicester, and you've got kind of four or five defenders chasing back, and the ball through from Kane to Bergwijn's perfect. And the way he hits it, you know, it's an impressive finish where he goes back across the keeper, and it looks from the angle like it's going to drift wide, and somehow just kind of spins in the far corner and hits the inside of the post and goes in, sparking scenes that, you know, that's a proper, when you think back to this time last year and there weren't fans in football, and you see the scenes in that away end, and you realise what Spurs fans have just witnessed there, being 2-1 down in the 95th minute, having seen a board go up for 5 minutes injury time, to suddenly 180 seconds later you're cheering a winner. It's what it's all about, isn't it? And I think for Bergwijn as well, a player who has shown some promise in his Spurs career so far, who's been linked to a move away in this window, he's a popular player with most Spurs fans. I think they're happy to see him get the headlines for once. An incredible evening of football, and it's going to be very hard, I think, for Leicester fans and Brendan Rodgers and his team to bounce back from the disappointment.
I tell you what, George, I absolutely loved Bergwijn when he was just trying to dodge the stewards as well, and, you know, the pile-on with all the players, and the lad with the Spurs bobble hat who's probably had his 2 seconds of fame on social media. I think Lucas Moura come and nicked his bobble hat and threw it on the floor, and just, there's nothing better than a midweek away day, you know, looking like you've lost the game, and all of a sudden in a minute you've actually won the game as well. Absolute pandemonium in the away, and it's what football's about, isn't it?
I'm calling it now, Spurs top four. I make them the favourites for top four now.
13-8, Dan. I think 13-8. They are fourth favourites, with Arsenal at 2-1, and they're 4-5 to finish above Arsenal this season.
Interesting. What's your prediction for the game?
Well, as I said at the top, I'm finding it difficult to make sense of this one. There's no way I'd be touching Chelsea at 8-13, but if it goes true to form of the cup games, then that could look like a bit of value anyway. But I think, given what we saw from Kane, I we've said a lot, Conte is a manager who gets the very best out of strikers, and it's not often you see strikers getting 10 opportunities to shoot. Kane getting one goal, hitting the woodwork as well. If that's the same again, you've got to think that the market might be viewing Kane's poor form, and there might be a bit of value backing him to score, especially because Chelsea don't come into this in great form either. So I'm backing Harry Kane to score anytime at 8-5. Lukaku is 10-11 to score first. Sorry, to score anytime. He's equally out of sorts, and I think Kane looks to me, between the two, obviously Chelsea short price are more likely to score, but I think if Spurs are to get on the score sheet, there's no denying who's the most likely to do so.
Just enough time for me to remind you that you can subscribe to The Athletic today and gain full access to all the brilliant articles, as well as ad-free versions of all our podcasts, including this one, for just £3.33 a month for an entire year. Go and do that now by visiting theathletic.com/footballpod. And with the January transfer window in full swing and just under 2 weeks from closing, The Athletic are recording daily transfer shows, bringing you the exclusive news and insight on all the big deals from the best newsroom in the industry. The only place you can hear these podcasts is on The Athletic app or by subscribing to The Athletic UK Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts. You can start a free trial of that today if you haven't used one already. My thanks goes to Stevie Man and Georgie Boy, and of course all of you for listening. Remember to hit subscribe so that you never miss a show. You've been listening to The Athletic Football Podcast. Have a great weekend and enjoy all the football.
The Athletic.